Hi, this is David Sweet, founder of Focus Core, and I'd like to invite you to take a look at our 2024 salary guide. It's a great resource for hiring APAC professionals wanting to know about the salaries for executive positions within Japan, as well as finding out information of what's important to attract the best talent in Japan. The salary guide is found on our website under About Salary Guide 2024. I hope you find this information useful for you and your company. Now, on to our podcast. So, welcome to the Focus Core podcast. I'm here with Nina Michaels Kim, the Director of Partnerships, Japan and Korea for the Institute of Management Accountants, or IMA. And so I'm very excited to welcome Nina to our podcast. She was in Japan last month, and unfortunately, I did not get the chance to meet her while she was here. So it's nice that we can spend some time together on our podcast. So welcome, Nina.
Thank you, David. It's really great to be on this podcast with you. Yes, exactly. I'm so sorry that I missed you when I was in Japan in October.
Yeah, so
nice to chat now.
And we've chatted on a couple of times, but for the people who don't know about you, kind of give us a rundown of your background and yeah, a little bit of your just kind of your history, please.
Thank you. Yeah. So as a background, so I'm how, you know, Japanese people would say typically old fashionedly, they would say I'm a hafu, right? So I'm a product of a Japanese mom and an American father.
I think they say you're a double now.
Now they say double,
yeah, like the double.
Yeah, exactly. Because it is true, because, you know, you're bicultural and bilingual. And my father was in the Air Force. He's retired now. But so I grew up mostly at Yokota Air Force Base in Fusa in Tokyo. And I graduated high school from there and then went to Pomona College in California, spent my 4 years there, enjoying the West Coast, got my BA. And, you know, my goal was, you know, to go into international diplomacy. And so then I went to Georgetown University, joined their master's for the School of Foreign Service, and really was trying to go into the State Department. Foreign Service, but then I had second thoughts during my second year. So I started to go into business because, you know, I wasn't quite sure if my Japanese language was really going to take me to Japan in the State Department. Most likely not, or until very, very late in my career, if I can ever manage it. So then I switched to business. I was already working to pay for some of my schooling as a bookkeeper for a nonprofit health organization in Washington, D.C. And that was the key why I actually applied, you know, to many pharmaceutical companies. And actually, I found the key when I went to a career fair for Japanese speakers. And there I met a recruiter from Sandoz, which is a Swiss pharmaceutical company. And he said, okay, you can join us, but you need to spend 2 years in our global headquarters at Basel. And I was like, Basel, where's Basel? Basel, Switzerland. Yeah, exactly. A 2 years management training program. And I said, okay, I'll do that. And then 2 years later, I could go to Japan, which was my dream, you know, to work in Japan. And then what happened is 1 year into that management training program, Basel, in Basel, Sandoz merged with Ciba Geigy, their rival, and they became Novartis. And so all these plans went, you know, they were kind of went down the drain. And I was really disappointed, but actually it was also fun to work on the merger as I was in the corporate controlling training. Mm-hmm. And then contributing to headcount reductions, doing all the cost savings and, you know, working my way up in corporate finance there. So it was sort of sad. But then on the other hand, I was really enjoying what I was doing in finance. So I spent 6 years with Novartis, Sandoz Novartis combined. And then after that, I went to, you know, I wanted to get out of the global headquarter environment. If I couldn't go to Japan, then I'll go to another Swiss affiliate of another company. And I chose MSD, which is the Swiss affiliate of Merck & Co. Mm. I spent 8 years there, initially as manager of financial planning and analysis. And I got my CMA there, which is the US CMA, which I'll explain later, but it stands for Certified Management and Accounting. That was really nice that the company paid for it, let me have time off to study for it. And I, from there, I got a better position. I was leading a team of four, became financial controller, head of compliance. And also worked also on the regional financial planning and strategic planning. So that was really nice. I spent 8 years with MSD, but as with a family, et cetera, and due to many reasons, I got out of the pharmaceutical industry and created my own company. And at the same time, I as a volunteer, since I now was an IMA member as the US CMA. So I created the Swiss chapter just purely as a volunteer. And I had a lot of other members who really wanted to also support creating, establishing a chapter in Switzerland. And it was quite successful, thanks also to the members that helped me. Very interesting is that because it was so successful that the IMA CEO and president, Jeff Thompson, came for our charter ceremony. And at that meeting, he saw what we did and he said, you know what, it would be great if you also set up the whole operations for IMA in Europe. And that's how I got started working for IMA. So nice. I spent about 8 years setting up IMA's operations in Europe. So set up the Zurich office, also Amsterdam and Europe, and is really big. So visited Turkey, Russia. We have a lot of members in Europe, and it was a really nice experience. But I've now handed over that whole Europe operations to my successor. And now I'm in my current role that you mentioned already, which is, you know, dedicated support to Japan and Korea IMA members and spreading awareness and building partnerships, such as the partnership with Focus Core. And so because I'm remotely based still in Switzerland, because, you know, now I've been here over 25 years, this is my home, but I definitely visit at least 2 times a year without COVID. And, you know, that's why I just visited in October and hopefully early next year in 2023. And there, I hope to meet you in person, David.
we'll do that. But that's a long way to get to, you finally got to Japan, to work in Japan, which, well done.
Thank you. That's actually my dream. I have a blog about this and maybe you can put the link to, in this podcast.
Absolutely.
When people come to it, because it's funny, the windy road and you finally achieve your childhood dream of using Japanese language skills and supporting, you know, people in Japan.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, being a recruiter and, you know, people come to me for career advice and ask about, you know, how to get from point A to Z, and it's not always a straight line, and it's not the way you think. I love how you've moved from major pharma companies, and then you create your own company, but then all of a sudden
you're running IMA and for Japan and Korea just by, you know, volunteering, and then it just grows, right? And you would never predict that, right?
Yeah. So my colleague said, you know, life works in mysterious ways. It sure does.
Isn't that wonderful? That's great. So tell us, we want to talk about the IMA a little bit. Let's start there. Tell us about that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really interesting because it is, you know, from the entry point of the working as a finance professional, but I still get to work together with finance, like-minded people. I have people who are like me, who were financial planning and analysis or CFOs that I was reporting to and supporting. So it's really interesting combination how I pivoted from being a financial professional and actually being in business development, supporting them. So IMA is the global association for people like, you know, financial planning and analysis managers, directors, all of our members. We have about 140,000 members worldwide. They mainly work for the CFO team. They are mainly working in companies and organizations. And this is as opposed to those, you know, certified public accountants who are, you know, on tax and auditing and compliance and working usually in the big four, you know, Deloitte and PwC, et cetera, well-known companies. But our members are normally working in companies like I was working for MSD. We have a lot of, you know, also manufacturing. It's not just pharmaceutical industries. And then, you know, there are members who also work for Big Four, mainly in the advisory area. And we have people who have both certifications. They want to have the whole accountant experience, both CPA and CMA. We also cater to them, you know, so it's not that we don't care about tax and compliance. That's not at all. But our focus, we're uniquely dedicated. IMA is uniquely dedicated to the management accounting people working within companies, supporting the business, achieving their goals, and decision support. That's really our focus. And we're global. We're our headquarters is in Montvale, New Jersey, US. And we try to give localized support. And then we have four regions. So Americas, of course, Asia Pacific. I'm part of the Asia Pacific team, even though I'm located now in Switzerland. And we have Europe team that I mentioned before. And of course, one of our another good strong area is Middle East, India, and Africa.
Cool. There's a couple of questions I want to follow up on that. Let's, I guess first is, you know, what's the big draw for people to join the IMA?
Yeah, it's great that you also asked that because number one, our IMA, the number one role is actually administrating the program, the global certification that I mentioned, which is the certified management accountant.
Okay.
In order to become a CMA, you have to be a member. We have other specialty credentials. You know, we also have certified in strategy and competitive analysis. So actually my title has also the CSCA, the certified in strategy and competitive analysis, which is the next level, advanced level for people who really want to become CFOs and high director role, C-level strategy support to business partners and business units. So that and we have other specialty credentials. We just released some other credentials in ESG, sustainability, and in DE&I, diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is really emerging topics, right? So these are things that IMA does. Our mission is developing, connecting, supporting financial professionals in business. So that's basically what we do. And of course, certifying them. Mm-hmm. So that's the main draw why people join IMA.
Got it. And what's the footprint look like in Japan?
Japan is growing, but of course the exam is tested in English. So you do have to have an adequate English level. And I would say together, I'm responsible for Korea and Japan. It's almost 600 members. And it, yeah, it's it, it. People always say if it was translated in Japanese, we would have so many members and stuff. But you know, the point is, it. On the other hand, it is a unique thing for bilingual Japanese mm-hmm. and Americans to sell. So there's plus points, pros and cons for either way.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. As a recruiter, I think it's a huge point to have on their resume, right? And then you had mentioned that there's more than 300 student chapters or student and professional chapters. What? Tell me more about that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say, exactly. So that was my impetus for joining IMA, because I set up a chapter in Switzerland, right? And mm-hmm. So as soon as there's a critical mass, there's an impetus to join and form a local chapter in whatever country or city. And we have a lot of volunteers who are dedicated to do that, because they also would like to network with the like-minded professionals. Mm-hmm. So we have, like, in over 160 countries, members in, you know, 160 countries, and there's a lot of chapters, and there's one in Japan. It used to be two chapters. There was a Tokyo chapter and then a Western Japan chapter, but we recently merged those two chapters to become one national chapter to be more inclusive. We have members in Hokkaido and Kyushu, so that a whole Japan chapter is actually more appropriate. We just launched that in October. So even though the Tokyo chapter has been over 20 years, it was great to make a merger of both of them to make it an even huge, you know, even larger chapter. So the chapters, we don't have any student chapters yet in Japan, okay. But in Philippines or in the US or also in probably Middle East, we have student chapters, and that's when students can, together with a supporting faculty advisor, can set chapters and also have even professionals for come to their classrooms or to the chapter meetings and get this, encourage this network between students and C-level participant practitioners. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's very attractive at a campus to have that student chapter for students to make them more globally minded and career minded and actually, improve their resumes, their curriculums before they go to the job market. Because if they have this kind of leadership experience, so for example, if you're a president or on the chapter board of a student chapter, that makes you high, you know, kind of marketable to other companies, and to see, wow, that's initiative, being a leader as a student, balancing like studying together with becoming a volunteer. I think that's also a lot of students have found careers that way, or their first entry level job by being a part of a student chapter.
That's great. I know that just in speaking with you that, you know, the IMA has so much, so many wonderful resources, training, as well as, you know, the certification, but, you know, being able to connect others and supporting them, and you have such a huge network. So I think I applaud that. I'd like to kind of broaden our topic from just because you have so many members and you're in touch with so many finance professionals. What do you see now are the challenges that finance professionals now face?
Yeah, I'm glad that you asked that, because it's really, really challenging for financial people. I mean, I think all career people, all industries, but especially finance people. And I think the pandemic has brought on a lot of new implications, and also, you know, automation. So what IMA has done is we recently released a new report where we highlight the six mega trends that are impacting financial professionals. And the first one, of course, is remote work because of the pandemic. And I believe, you know, Focus Core had a webinar last night about this October, yeah, November 9th. And it would be great to hear from you about how some of the summarized from that webinar about the challenges. But this this first mega trend that IMA also released in our report has their, you know, has impacted financial professionals. You need to be able to do remote closing now. You need to be able to remote onboarding of your team members. And these are, you know, quite a new, you know, new way of working, changes to your physical workplace. This is quite a big mega trend that financial professionals need to deal with. Second mega trend is the ESG, this, you know, environmental social governance. This, you know, we hear this a lot. This is an emerging topic for, you know, in Japan is, you know, on the forefront. It's increasingly necessary for reporting requirements, carbon emissions. People are definitely talking about it. There's the COP27 going on right now, you know, climate change, stakeholder demands. So companies need to be able to effectively and transparently report it and manage it, or they would have a negative impact. So this definitely impacts financial professionals. And, you know, the third mega trend is ERM, you know, enterprise risk management. This has been around, but there's more awareness now, especially after the pandemic. It's not a requirement that financial professionals actually need to predict like COVID-19, but they need to at least be aware of it. And, you know, their enterprise risk management needs to have contingency plans, disaster recovery, and ensure business continuity. So that's the third megatrend. And then the fourth one, it's closely, it's DE&I. I mentioned this before, diversity, equity, and inclusion. This is the S part of ESG, right? The social part. So it's very, it goes hand in hand. It's very necessary to do the equity part, you know, also customer representation for, you know, also on the board of a company. It's a competitive differentiator. You don't have only the same ideas and culture. So it's also part of the branding of a company. So it's critically important. So that's, we said that's the fourth mega trend. And the fifth one is what we maybe also, I mentioned before, automation and technology. Finance people really need to have this, have, you know, transform their whole function. And that's why we have hand in hand financial transformation. If they don't have if they're not using AI and machine learning and programming of bots, you know, they're completely, you know, going to be dinosaurs. They really need to have automate repetitive tasks so that they can go into value added tasks and support the business. So that's definitely the fifth mega trend. And the sixth one is closely related to that, and that's about upskilling, because if and continuous learning. And that's what I should have mentioned more about the IMA value to members or to the world community as a whole is our you know, prolific offerings of CPE or continuous professional educational offerings, because this upskilling, a trend, mega trend of upskilling and continuous learning. This is so critical for finance people, right? Yep. Because if they do not do this, then, you know, they could be irrelevant. They have to future proof themselves. They have to be aware of, you know, data visualization, Tableau, blockchain, RPA, you know, and not only that, but also work on the soft skills, because all these trends that we talked about, remote work, DE&I and ESG, you do need to have the leadership skills. You need to have the soft skills, how to deal with different cultures, how to coach people remotely. All these things are so important. And that's why it's upskilling, not only in the technology and analytical fields, you know, and also to be fast. We also have courses on Agile and Scrum. All this kind of stuff is so important. So that's the sixth mega trend of upskilling and continuous learning. So I believe that, especially after COVID, these, you know, mega trends, they're continuing to grow in importance, right? So I think upskilling ties all of these six mega trends together.
It's a lot. Is there a link to the report?
Okay, yes, that's a great idea. I could also send you things. We released that report together on the International Management Accounting Day, May 6th. Right. And I will send something about that.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, those are huge, right? Those mega trends. So the six: remote work, environmental, social governance, ERM, enterprise risk management, diversity, equity and inclusion, automation, and upskilling and continuing education. So we talked about remote work yesterday. And I think one of the biggest challenges around that was just, as you'd already said, was the management and upskilling and learning how to manage. Everybody wants to do a good job, or that they were forced to during the pandemic to just work remotely. Now, how do managers change how they work? Can they work in Japan? A lot of the finance professionals were the ones that had to go into the office, that were forced to do closing to get to some of the technology, because the technology in Japan is behind. So I find that there's so much potential there for Japan, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm surprised that even our, I shouldn't say surprised, but we should be at the forefront about that. But the IMA finance department was also able to do, you know, like we were quite ready about this, all of our technology and remote closing and remote publishing of our magazine. Because I think that, you know, in Japan, it wasn't completely locked down, right?
No.
So, yeah. And that's why they got away with it, kind of. And so that's why they're behind a little bit in Japan, because for a lot of countries, it was quite a complete lockdown. You really couldn't go to the office unless you were a first responder, you know, like nursing and medical fields, or grocery markets, etc. So it's then you're forced to do it. You really needed to do remote closing, remote onboarding. But it is quite difficult. I agree with the management part of it, because I what I think is that if you were a longtime member of an organization, then you already had the you know, personal kinships or the collegial atmosphere. You were part of a company already. So, you know, a 3-year absence or 2.5 or an absence of just working remotely, you can kind of handle that. But if you were a new person just joining and you weren't able to ever get that, you know, atmosphere or feel part of the company yet, I think that is really difficult. It's quite difficult to get them working remotely and smoothly, collaborating with people when you've never, ever met them before. So, yeah.
I think the big takeaway that we've gotten from our webinar and from, you know, the surveys that we've taken, was that people don't mind coming into work. And some people, there's always extremes. There's people that want always to work from home 100%. People want to come to the office 100%. But in general, most people want a hybrid of sorts. But people also want the reasoning behind things. If we're going to go to the office, it's going to be for collaboration, and let's think about and make that time important. And time is now much more important, because I think, like, commuting time, for 2 years we never had to commute, and so people have been able to take up hobbies or spend time with family that they weren't allowed to before. And so that's so important. It was quite interesting, I think, for me, that the takeaways for that was that people really need to think through and justify coming to the office and how time is spent.
I agree. That's also been coming out through IMA surveys with their own employees, and then also with our members. There's got to be a justification for coming in, and you know, you don't want to go commute for a long time and then not any there's no collaboration taking place, right? Or somebody else is on remotely too. You're meeting somebody, but what's the reason? What's the purpose then, right? So I agree with that. I think it's important to have that kind of team meetings, you know, scheduled ahead of time. Like in-person meetings, and then have a justification.
And with wonderful creativity that's come out for managers. One, how do you build that team building? How do you manage by objectives? How do you keep in contact and build camaraderie? And you do that online, and people are thinking of creative new ways of doing things, which is wonderful. And using technology, which I think in new ways that we thought we couldn't, which leads me to my next question as a segue. What do you think in the future of finance with technology, as that is one of the things that IMA is looking at for their megatrends? Talk about technology a little bit.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for asking that. Yeah, it's definitely really important for financial people. And, you know, what I mentioned before about this data and technology, now we have access to a lot of data. And I think for financial people, what's crucial is what to do with that data and mm-hmm. how to relay it and how to actually, you know, use it to come up with, you know, strategic insights and decisions that will help the business. So what we, you know, is we have our courses like a data visualization and, you know, analytics courses, mm-hmm. fundamentals, and even an advanced level, and also storytelling, which is just a soft skill, but it's so important for financial people to move from just somebody that creates reports to somebody that could actually use that data to convey a story and to try to get get the decision makers, the business unit directors to actually decide on an important decision that impacts the whole company. So I think that is the, you know, biggest change. It's, of course, you need to be aware of all this, what I mentioned before, technology like RPA and blockchain and Tableau, et cetera. But it's actually the leadership skill, storytelling skill, the soft skill to make sure that the executives can understand all the data. That's the biggest one. I think you wanted to say something about something.
our audience can't see me clapping when you said storytelling, because we did a survey here, and the number one skill that all the managers said was they all to improve as a financial professional, learn storytelling. And when I talk to CFOs, they're looking to hire someone, and they're like, we need someone that can give the story behind the numbers and explain what's going on. And storytelling cannot be underrated as far as if you want to upskill as in a financial professional, as well as many other parts, storytelling.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I was really lucky. Back in Novartis, my highest role in Novartis was head of finance and IT department. And going mm-hmm. into the IT department, I had the CIO there was quite good about like, okay, we have to present our finances to the CEO. And what's our story? You know, nice. I would have never, if I had was stuck in the financial, you know, siloed finance department, I don't know back then, especially if I would have ever come across that, or like, wow, that's my duty too. It's not just coming up with the numbers, but actually what's the story. So it was great that I actually had the opportunity to work with him and got that. And so that was even 10 years ago. And we had the same request when I was heading up IMA for the Europe region, mm-hmm. lots of requests also for building up financial people so they could have this strategic insight and convey a story, the storytelling skills. And IMA does have a skill, storytelling for financial professionals. We have a course about that. So that is quite one of our popular courses, highly in demand. It is definitely difficult for a traditional finance person who perhaps, you know, was more on the reporting side, really heavy into data and details, to come up and to see the overview, you know, the complete story of what they're trying to do. That to move from details to insights to the overview is quite difficult, and that's another skill that financial people need more and more.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the questions you met Jonathan and Hisato from our team, and I talked to both of them about how to develop as a business partner and move towards a strategic enabler role. How do you see that? How do you see financial leaders improve and move towards that strategic enabler role?
Yeah, it's great that you asked that too. So I mentioned already about, you know, the data is there, you know, how do you use it and relay it? So that's part of the storytelling. But also another thing is the analysis part, right? Mm. So the financial planning analysis part. And analysis is really what we're now seeing is not just, you know, there's a many different forms of analysis, starting with the basic, analytical skill, predictive, and then prescriptive, which is solving problems. I mean, this is something that not all financial people can do, but it's if you want to become this enabler and business partner, it really is. And that's what I've also mentioned. I came into this role mostly within when I went to the Swiss affiliate in MSD, where I was solving problems together with the business unit director. And this is, being a business partner to them. How can we achieve your objectives and also the company objectives together? So this is something that is quite, it takes going back, changing from the long time ago bookkeeper transactional processing type of person into somebody who is the strategic enabler. The analysis part will help. The tools that you get, we have also a whole complete course curriculum on financial planning analysis to get this insight, how to go from predictive, prescriptive analysis, and you get the tools so that you can support decisions, and also the soft skills. And, you know, what I mentioned, I also have this other specialty credential, this, strategy and competitive analysis. That was really great to also learn about strategic insights and, you know, like, Bluefield, all this kind of, how do you help with business unit directors and the company to become more competitive? This is something like it's almost like a mini MBA course, right? It's like getting this kind of information is so important so that you have the business acumen to become a strategic enabler. You cannot just be a financial professional only knowing about financial accounting subjects and topics. You really need to have this kind of business acumen and almost this mini MBA thing that to have this kind of be a strategic enabler. That's my opinion. Yeah. So we have those tools, and it's really, again, going to upskilling. And maybe it's also part of your personality. One of my comments as a, you know, I've had almost, I know, 13 to 14 years of financial professional experience. My feedback, the strengths was I gave good customer service, you know, right. Like I wanted to be a supporter of them and always went out away, got out of my desk and went out of, my little cubicle or office or my, and went to the, people, the business unit directors themselves, and went there to their desk, tried to help them, tried to understand their issues and to become a strategic enabler. I think that's the key. Have the tools, go have this analysis of FP&A tools, go through our courses, get the strategic insight to the competitive analysis and strategy certification, mm-hmm. but also your personality of getting out and trying to support, like kind of like a customer service within a company, internal consultant within a company, right? Mm-hmm. I think that is so important. If you have that, take yourself out of your comfort zone, not just doing reporting and in your own office and playing with Tableau and everything just by yourself on your desk, but actually going out, right, and helping.
So I couple of things to take away. I mean, the first is just that being able to be a leader that's seen, I think, and especially now with this, you know, working remotely, it's so important to take the initiative to, you know, turn on the camera and call someone up and have, you know, just a quick, how are you doing? And be able to be that leader. But the second part that I think that you're really highlighting very well is the development tool of it. And obviously IMA is just amazing for that. I think you'd written somewhere like 75% of IMA's courses are available for free. And, you know, you have like kind of just this off the shelf standardized training that employees can use, employers can use, which I think is fantastic, right? It's spot on. It's very skill specific to finance professionals. I would love to spend a little bit of time kind of just talking around the IMA Finance Academy. And because you'd mentioned like there's two tracks through that Finance Academy. And I think that'd be interesting for our listeners to hear those two.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks about that. Yeah, I mentioned this at the salary release guide launch mm-hmm. in October. And since you weren't there, and also to listeners of this podcast, you know, this tool or this new offering from IMA for companies, for our corporate partners, this IMA Finance Academy, it was really developed because we got so many requests from a lot of our corporate partners worldwide that, you know, they would like to have this turnkey solution, this mm-hmm. off the shelf thing, you know, to help continuous learning for their employees, their staff, to upskill, to help them, you know, invest in their staff so that they could become the strategic enabler and business partner that you mentioned. And, you know, why would they develop their own thing if they can just use ours? So that's the, you know, impetus for this IMA Finance Academy, because we're, you know, like a prolific developer of content for our members. You know, why we do that, again, just to say about this, even before this upskilling, the need for upskilling because of automation technology, IMA was always about continuous learning. We, as a CMA, in order to maintain your CMA certification, you need to have at least 30 hours of continuous professional education each year. So that's the reason why they offer to members these courses, always continuously developed, because, you know, we will get bored. We can't get CPE for using the same courses. That's why we have so many courses. And that's what our corporate partners said, who are already CMA, say, hey, we would like to offer this to all of our employees. And that was the reason for the IMA Finance Academy. So we have these two tracks because, you know, we have one membership track, which is the first track, which is only to have access to all of these courses that I mentioned and webinars on also emerging topics. Mm-hmm. And so that gives this membership track gives like a discounted membership to our corporate partners, and they can offer all of our courses to their staff. So that is so important to create this continuous learning culture, right? To retain members, retain your staff and employees by offering them, hey, for you to learn and upskill, and here's some courses that you can take for free. And our courses are specifically tailored for financial and accounting financial professionals. So it's so important. It's not basic skills like that maybe you can find in LinkedIn Learning or something. These are really, really tailored for our members. And we have, you know, foundational to more advanced level courses. So that's the membership track. And then the second track is the USCMA track. And this is includes everything that I mentioned before that could be found in the membership track, but also you can be enrolled to the USCMA program as a candidate. Oh, wow. So you can get that certification that I got, you know, almost 15 years ago within Merck, but which is, you know, this globally recognized professional certification to, you know, really prove that you have the management accounting skills to support business. And that's what I was also, I forgot to mention this, David, but, you know, through upskilling, when I got the CMA, I got so much more confidence in myself because I've had this tool that I passed this exam. That's what enabled me to more go out more to the business units to actually have a say and to voice my opinions during corporate meetings. So I think that's also giving this confidence is also a big role about having this CMA behind your name on your, you know, your business card. So, you know, this CMA track compared to the membership track, this is really for your high potentials who, you know, CFOs, FP&A people, financial planning analysis directors, finance directors, people who will, you know, who are in the succession plan to move up. As I mentioned, it could, it's like almost like a mini MBAs, but it's less expensive than an MBA, right? So it's a great way to train future leaders. And, you know, it's global. You know, I found out about the CMA when I was in Switzerland. Yeah, so you see how global it is. We have, so it's not, as opposed to the CPA, which is very tied, the US CPA is tied to the US state boards of accountancy. So, and you need a lot of accounting credits to get that. That's why it was totally out of the question for me, because I didn't have accounting credits. I was, my major was international diplomacy and international relations. So for me, the CMA was clearly my profession of choice, because, and also it was at that time, you know, I could take it in Switzerland, and it was my area. I was definitely all about, you know, value creating, not looking at the past, not looking at taxes and compliance and regulatory reporting. I was all about trying to help businesses, decision support, you know, planning and analysis, which was my title, you know, so that is totally CMA. So the CMA track, you would get the, you know, as I mentioned, it's like you get the enrolled inside, you're entered into our program, you become a candidate. And the, you know, the CMA is really focused, the exam is focused on the 12 core areas that are necessary to become this business partner and strategic enabler that we mentioned. It's two exams. Each exam is about 4 hours each. They're challenging, rigorous, especially for non-native English speakers, but globally our pass rate is about 50%. So it's achievable, it's feasible. And I think that's important. So also for full-time working professionals.
It's fantastic. When I'm, it's why it's so exciting to partner with you guys. So when I, because doing the executive career coaching for people, and there's two things that professionals who are high achievers need to work on, is one is skills, the other is network. And usually technical professionals are very good at the skills side, whereas sometimes communication people are very good at the network. And it's very challenging for potential, high potential executives to meet both of those needs, those skills in the network, and to have that, to bridge that confidently, and that's the wonderful word that you used, was having the confidence to do that. And that's why I think the Academy is just exceptional, because it helps those high potentials bridge that gap. And that small investment is a huge investment in a career and what's going to happen at the end of when they are certified. So that's very exciting, Nina. I think that's a wonderful program for finance professionals. So thank you for sharing about that.
Thank you. No, I loved how you summarized everything. I couldn't say it any better than you did. Yeah, it really is. And getting it early on is even better for your career. But you can even do it right now. You know, it's like transitioning from if you want to use it as a vehicle to transition from traditional accounting to go into management accounting and financial planning analysis. That's one of the main reasons why people do it in Japan too.
Mm-hmm. So as we're coming up on time, one of the things I love to ask all my guests is to have an omiyage for listeners. So I'm very excited. I'm on pins and needles, Nina, to hear what you might offer for an omiyage for our listeners today.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked about this. So the omiyage for your listeners, and actually all of the individual clients and companies of Focus Core, if you might still be unsure, or you're considering about the IMA Finance Academy or the USCMA, but you're still not quite certain about taking the commitment, what we have, so the drum roll, 3 months trial opportunity for you guys to try out IMA membership for 3 months for absolutely free. And when I mentioned 3 months trial, IMA automatically offers a 3 months grace period to our membership. So this means even though it's 3 months trial, it's actually 6 months duration. Months. Yeah. So everybody can try out IMA members, use our resources, take advantage of our, continuous professional educational courses for free for 6 months. And the best part of this is that within the 6 months, as I mentioned, to enter the USCMA track, you do need to be a member. So you already have the membership part paid for. So you could just sign up for the CMA exam during that 3 months trial. So oh, wow. This That's link, great. Yeah, I know this omiyage will be in the thing. In a format of a link that your clients can or listeners can just click on this and it'll be take them right to this 3 months trial where they just have to fill in their email address and just critical fields so that they can get the welcome email that would have the Focus Core logo on it. I already seen it. It's looking good. And that link will be sent out in the next upcoming Focus Core Finance and Accounting mailing newsletter. Anybody on your team, Jonathan, Hisato or Simon, anybody on the finance accounting team can just give that link to your clients.
Fantastic. Well, that's super exciting. Thank you, Nina. And we will put links in the show notes to that. We'll also have, we encourage people to connect with you on LinkedIn as well. And
yes,
if people have questions, is it best to email you?
Yeah, for sure. They can email me. Yeah, put my email there and Michael's Kim, all of one word, no hyphen. Fantastic. At imanet.org, or just find me in LinkedIn. I'm also on Twitter at Nina Michaels Kim. Also, all one word. No.
Is it a real account? Is it a real account, Nina?
That is so true. I'm not sure if I want to pay $8 a month to Elon Musk, but but this one is.
We may not have a Twitter account when this goes live. Yeah, so we shall see.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Very true.
Well, thank you so much for spending time with us, Nina, to tell us about your background, about your experiences about what's going on in the finance industry and about the IMA. I think that's we've covered quite a lot of ground today.
Thank you so much for your time too, David. Thank you.